Hi everyone, and welcome back to Into the Void. I'm your host Ant, and you join me today for episode number 12 of my weekly audio series, or my A-log as I'm going to call it going forward now. So thank you all for tuning in today. As you can hear, I'm recording this once again from the beautiful New Forest on the south coast of the UK on a very still day today, and apparently it's the warmest day of the year, which is obviously quite unusual as we head towards the middle of September 2023. Anyway, I hope you're all doing well and managing to thrive during these extremely transformative and quite challenging times. So as always, I'm going to begin today's particular episode sharing a news story that kind of hit the mainstream media headlines a few days ago. And the reason why I'm going to talk about this particular news story today is because it's really quite instructive, quite interesting, because it reveals some of the tools and techniques that the mainstream media, that the political establishment, that the control system, whatever you want to call it, the bad guys and the bad girls, what they use in order to keep the general public in a state of fear, which obviously means they're living in a low state of consciousness. So this is in regard to a criminal suspect, we're told, a chap in his early 20s, I believe, of Jordanian extraction, although he is a UK citizen, goes by the name of Daniel Khalif. And he is, at the moment, Britain's most wanted man, apparently. Now, they're not saying, although I believe he's of Islamic, or how should we say, he has Islamic heritage. The media are saying that he's a criminal suspect. So it's not at the moment being couched in how you normally expect, or he's a Islamic terror suspect or a terror threat. But anyway, it is said a couple of days ago that he escaped from Wandsworth Prison in London. Apparently he was working in one of the kitchens in Wandsworth Prison, and he managed to escape. Listen to this story. He managed to escape by strapping himself under one of the lorries that supplies goods, in this instance food, to the prison. And this has all happened, obviously, under the watchful eye of the authorities, of course, within the prison. And now the Metropolitan Police in London are said to be on his tail. And of course, people are told under no circumstance, to approach this man, because he is the most wanted man in Britain, and therefore the most evil man in Britain. Now, first of all, I think it's highly unlikely or implausible that the story we're being told in the mainstream media, that he managed to strap himself under a lorry as it was leaving the prison. It sounds totally implausible to me. I mean, I guess it's not impossible, but at the same time, as with all of these kind of incidents with terror suspects, at least there's people saying, well, I would never have thought, you know, he seemed of good character because he was once in the British Army, apparently. And many of his former colleagues are saying, well, you know, he was a good man. I would never have thought he would have, because he's being charged of, apparently, of sort of like selling secrets to Iran, or enemies of the British state, so to speak. And as I was just saying, there's all these testimonies, there's all these pictures. So first of all, my spidey senses are being alerted here, because I do smell a rat. I do smell a proverbial rat. Now, that's not to say that all of these kind of incidents or with terror suspects, that, you know, they're always patsies, or they're always, you know, just people that maybe don't even exist. they're just photo montages and the person doesn't actually exist. I mean, I don't know enough about the case to comment on this, but I do, as I was saying, I do smell a rat with this one, because it's in the media headlines constantly, and they keep showing his mugshot just to ramp up the fear level. And it does put me in mind of we remember from 9/11, of course, in the preceding days after the attacks in New York on the Twin Towers. We were told, allegedly, that some of the suspects had attended a flying school in Florida, and they'd learnt to fly little Cessna planes, and there was said to be evidence in the logbook that this had taken place. Now, again, of course, we know that this sounds completely implausible, and anyone who's done any research into 9/11, as I have done quite a lot over the years, know that this was just a cover story that the mainstream media and the authorities put out there as a way to hide the truth, if you will. And the reason why this happens, as in this case with this character called Daniel Khalif, that he allegedly strapped himself under a vehicle, a small lorry, like a small heavy goods vehicle lorry, as it was leading to prison. The reason why this sounds like an implausible story, the reason why, as with the 9/11 event and the alleged terror suspects attending flying school, is because it creates deliberately incredulity in the minds of the public. So those of us who can see beyond the veil a little bit, those of us who have a little bit more awareness, can go, do you know what? That just doesn't sound right to me. But then those who are asleep, if I can use that phrase, who have, let's just say, slightly less awareness, personal inner awareness, and they still fall for a lot of these kind of lies put out by the mainstream media, the fact that they go along with it, those of us that can see, we feel sort of anger and frustration towards those that can't see. And I think, as I've spoken about before on my sister's show, Discerning Consciousness podcast, this is deliberately done. There's quite a dark agenda here, because it creates division between those who can see the truth and those who can't, as we saw during COVID in the last 3 years. It creates a lot of gross polarization, and it creates a lot of animosity between people, as I was talking about last week, as many of us have experienced, perhaps within our own families or friends, or within colleagues at work, who, if we haven't followed along with the COVID narrative and all the protocols, we have found ourselves under attack. Now, if I just broaden this story out even wider, as we know, the system really can only keep itself going, can only keep itself relevant, can only be relevant in the minds of the general public by creating new enemies. Now, one of the reasons why I believe this story has broken here in the UK, it's not really an international story at the moment, is because the system is running out of external enemies. Now, the situation that we've had in Ukraine with Russia since February last year, for about a year and a half now, that's dying on its feet. At some stage soon, I think even the mainstream media will have to admit that Russia achieved their military objectives a long time ago in the Ukraine with regards to this what is called a special military operation. At the moment, the mainstream media are still trying to make out that the Ukraine, with their latest push, is making advancement, and Putin apparently is dying of cancer, and as each day passes, he's about to be overthrown. by opposition groups within Russia, which to all intents and purposes sounds like complete rubbish. So this idea of creating an enemy, aka, you know, sort of like another Hitler in the form of Putin, really is failing more and more. It just doesn't have, it isn't sticking, if you like, in the minds of the general public. And I think that's one of the reasons why we may well see a reinflation of the so-called Islamic terror threat in the form of ISIS, which seems to be its current form or current, its current iteration at least. And yeah, so I just thought I'd briefly talk about that news story, because really, as I was talking about last week, I think, yeah, it was last week, how since COVID broke, the whole COVID plandemic psyop, we haven't heard much about, we haven't heard much from Islamic State. And it, I think, as I said, probably on my Facebook account at the start of COVID in spring 2020, that ISIS, Islamic State, whatever moniker they're going under now, have been retired. And it seemed as if the system, the powers that be, were looking at new ways of creating fear in the general public. But now, because that kind of like, I believe, has served its purpose. And again, as I spoke about recently, there are some sort of rumours of a COVID Mark II. I'm still not convinced of that happening. But we may well see a reinflation of the fake Islamic terror threat. So watch out for that, perhaps in the media of your own country, as the COVID narrative fails. And that's where we're seeing more and more of a kind of push towards this constant kind of global warming narrative, and that we're all going to die in a fiery furnace due to climate change. Anyway, I just want to lastly add on this, next week on Into the Void, I'm going to touch upon a little bit about the media again, and also a little bit about how, speak to the kind of Orwellian aspect of how the enemy changes, but the enemy always remains the same. I think it was something along the lines of, in George Orwell's 1984 novel, I think it was Winston said that Oceania, they have always been at war with Eurasia, and that Oceania was at war with East Asia instead, and that was the truth before. So there's this kind of like constant theme of what happens is, one minute a group is our friend, a particular nation, or it could be a group of people, so-called terrorist organization. One minute they're our friend in the form of the freedom fighters, and then they switch to being our enemy. So more about that next week, in next week's episode, if you tune in. Anyway, I'm just going to move on now. And the next thing that I want to pick up in today's particular episode of Into the Void, I want to talk about something in regard to COVID-19 and this regular feature that I'm calling my COVID memoirs. Because I think it's important, as other people are saying online, is not to fall into fear about, oh, what are they going to do next? Is there going to be a COVID Mark II? Is there going to be another kind of fake virus? But it's also, from time to time, it can be helpful as an cathartic kind of healing process to muse upon what we've been through. So what I'm going to share today, really, in terms of my COVID memoirs, is kind of like it's something that came to me during the summer of 2022. So we were 2 years on, and think a lot of the restrictions had finally been dropped here in the UK at least, and we really were returning to a normal life once again. And it was something, I can't remember who it was that was sharing this, but I would call it like a sort of teaching that COVID brought us beyond the physical level, beyond the physical realm, beyond the sort of idea of good versus evil. And I know these kind of conversations can be quite difficult sometimes. And as in a previous episode of Discerning Consciousness, I spoke about kind of spiritual absolutes. And we do have to be careful when we talk about any concepts of like non-dualism beyond good and evil, because it, you know, people think you're saying that you're justifying murder, rape, and criminality. Of course, that isn't the case. So you have to be careful. You have to kind of dispense with your normal, kind of like a normal judgment about the world, and just think of it in terms of a highest teaching beyond the physical realm. And this is an ongoing conversation that I will share with you guys. Now, beyond the whole, you know, don't trust the authorities, the scamdemic, the real evil that was perpetrated upon humanity, and a lot of unnecessary suffering that many millions of people, if not billions, went through. The main kind of takeaway, if you will, not food takeaway, but the main teaching that I became aware of is that humanity really, and I know in my own life, unless I'm kind of pushed, unless the events in my life kind of lead me towards a crisis situation, then I, like most human beings, it's all part of, you know, it's part of being a human being. There's nothing wrong with it. We do tend towards safety. We do tend towards comfort zones. That's the word I was looking for more. We do tend to find it difficult to push beyond our comfort zones. We do find it kind of difficult to maybe start new projects, maybe start new creative ventures, unless we're roused or pushed into it. So the real sort of highest teaching of COVID was when people's businesses closed, or people were no longer able to go to work, or perhaps unfortunately some people's businesses, you know, they went out of business, they went bankrupt, even if there was help available from the government, you know, it didn't help all businesses from, you know, avoiding bankruptcy. So on a sort of higher level, people were forced into approaching life in a different way, looking at new solutions and sort of like looking at ways of doing things sort of outside the box. So it's quite often, it's quite common that we will look, as I was just saying, human beings, we will only do that when we come across a crisis, in this form a fake pandemic, as we know. And it forced a lot of people to reassess their priorities in life. I know that was the case for me. I took my podcast kind of like in a different sort of direction, in that I started doing my COVID or my Rona memoirs from the spring onwards. And that was the first time I'd done recordings on my own. So that was me pushing beyond a comfort zone, because before then I'd done them with Mike and other great guests and you know, people that have contributed to Discerning Consciousness over the years. But because during the initial lockdown here in the UK, I didn't have the opportunity to meet up with other people. This is just an example of how my behaviour or my life or my creative expression, if I can put it like that, went in a completely different direction. And I started doing recordings on my own, and that gave me a renewed sense of empowerment. And that might have never happened if it wasn't for COVID. Now, I'm not saying, again, see, on the other hand, I do know, as I was just saying at the beginning of this particular point in today's show, a lot of people have suffered when being pushed very hard, or having no choice but to approach life in a different way in the form of this particular crisis that was foist upon it. I mean, I'll give another example maybe to flesh out this point. As we know, when we suffer bereavement, I mean, all of you guys and girls listening have obviously suffered bereavement at some point in your life, unless you've been very, very lucky. So just from my own point of view, back in the spring of 2016, my dad, my late father, died really at quite a young age, in his early 70s. unexpectedly, of an aneurysm, a brain aneurysm, a blood bleed, if you're not familiar with what that is. And then subsequently, that made me shift my perspective in life. That made me look at life anew, look at life afresh. And because I realized that, you know, that on the surface at least, you know, we do appear to just have one life, and it is incumbent upon us to make the most of that. And that often means pushing beyond our comfort zones, and that often means pushing beyond our fears. So after my dad died, one of the ways in which I reacted was I did enact certain things in my life that I had been putting off up until then. But things changed, my internal landscape changed after my dad died. So this is just an example, like with COVID, when crises come along in the form, and this was in the form of the sudden death of my father, very traumatic type of situation for my family and I, that we were all pushed into living life in varying degrees in a new way. And we were reassessing our priorities, as I did. So it's just another way in which, you know, along with COVID, many people have had to reassess their life, perhaps in the way in which they've ended relationships, because they realise perhaps their partner and them weren't on the same, you know, the same kind of hymn sheet. They didn't share the same perspective on life when it comes to big issues, perhaps like vaccines and things like that. So just to finish this point or this particular sharing, on a higher level, the teaching is, as hard as it might be to say on a three-dimensional level, that it actually was a good thing, the whole COVID event, on a higher dimensional level or higher teaching, because it forced humanity to awaken, at least to some degree. And we all saw, as Thomas Sheridan brilliantly says in his content at the time, we all got the greatest lesson. We all received the greatest lesson you'll ever receive. We all had a great lesson in how society operates, from the pharmaceutical industry to the National Health Service, the NHS in the UK, to how big business operates, to how your government operates, to how the media operates. We had the greatest lesson. It all fell into view, and we could literally see it right in front of us. As many people said, it was literally, we could see the matrix right up close and personal, so to speak. So yeah, I thought I'd share that particular aspect of my COVID memoirs in today's particular episode of Into the Void. So up next, I just want to make reference to a really important quote that is mentioned quite a lot in sort of New Age spiritual circles. And the reason why I've mentioned it is because I think there's kind of like a misunderstanding of what it means. So I'm just going to share with you today my take on what I think this quote means. So the quote is, to be in the world, but not of the world. So what does that actually mean? And as I say, it's spoken of quite a lot, really, by those who share content, or those who have influence online, on social media. And it's this sort of idea of how we can detach ourselves from the pain of the world, or the pain we might feel of the world, the Weltschmerz, which is just basically a German phrase, which just basically means the pain of the world, which since COVID, and we've obviously been feeling more and more with greater intensity. So it's to be a detached observer of the material world and all of the strange kind of happenings, as I was talking about first up in today's news section. But I think where the mistake comes in about being the observer, the common misconception. It isn't about fighting or resisting. It's not about fighting the system. It's not about constantly obsessing about all the ways that the system, as we know, is deceiving us and is deliberately putting out disinformation and outright blatant lies. And to be in the world but not of the world also means that you recognize, as I've spoken about before, you recognize if you are in fear, if you are in anger, if you are fighting, or if you're trying to resist or push back, as I did for many years, the dark forces and all their expressions within the material plane, then you need to realize and consider the extent to which that might be coming from unhealed emotional trauma or emotional baggage. And I've worked through that with the help of various people, including a friend of the show and a former guest, Heather Heaton, worked through my emotional baggage using shamanism and things like cutting of the ties and various other shamanic techniques and practices. And the other thing, my take on how we can be to be in the world but not of the world is, and this is one I must admit, this is a point that I do still really struggle with when I slow myself down and pause and reflect. But it's the idea of, oh, can you leave it, or can we leave it all behind? The stories, the narratives, the belief systems, the ideologies, this whole idea that the world should change from what it is, that the pain should go away, that the darkness shouldn't be trying to express itself in the world, and that the light should be overtaken and should be able to give its fullest expression out there and in the hearts of men and women and in human consciousness as a whole. Can you leave all that behind? I know I struggle with that one. I'm desperate to see to see a better world out there, whatever that might look like. It's hard to say, isn't it, really? But a world of less unnecessary suffering and less trauma and less pain. I'm struggling with the idea of giving that up, because I am still very much attached to the idea that one day, probably not in my lifetime, I'm getting on now in my 50s, my early 50s, the hope that at least, as Neil Cramer says, we see the bad guys vaporized, if I can put it like that, or the empire, as he calls it, does go away. And we do, you know, have a media that reverts to what media and journalism should be about. Not ideological genders, and what democracy and a true democracy would be about, which is just administrators. Not agendas driven by poisonous ideology. Can I leave that all behind? Can I wake up each day and go, do you know what, as much as I hope and wish for that, for humanity in the future, I need to stop my attachment to it, because it isn't a healthy thing. But by the same token, it really is, you know, I think it's a very human response to want to see less unnecessary suffering and pain in the world. And also, I just want to talk about this idea of to be in the world but not of the world is also, I think, it means that you're quite happy to operate within mainstream society, if I can put it like that. So to be the observer doesn't mean you necessarily remove yourself to the fringes of society. It doesn't mean that you have resentment towards the so-called sheep or those who are still asleep. You kind of like to be a sincere observer, we need to have we need to have moved on from that. And again, this brings us back to a constant theme of my content in recent years, and this idea of the heart opening up. And I don't mean the heart opening up in terms of a kind of very schmaltzy way where it's all about, as with the woke phenomena, very sort of insipid expressions of love or thanks or praise or gratitude or that. I'm talking about a real deep-centered, kind of like heart-centeredness, a real sincerity that can look at the woke thing and look at, let's just pick up on, say, climate activists and some of the crazy things that they do and the way in which they want to demonstrate how angry they are at the authorities and the fact that they're not doing enough to tackle climate change. And yes, we can be angry towards them because they're being played by the system. They can't see, in one regard, that they're being used like pawns on the chessboard by the system. But by the same token, I can relate to these individuals because when I was trying to fight back against the system in a very different way, against the darkness, and I got into the work of Wilhelm Reich and Organite, and I got hundreds of tower busters, which are crystals and inorganic metals and plastic resin, and I was placing these tower busters by all of the mobile phone mast installations around Southampton and small towns in and around the New Forest, because I was sticking it to the man. I was fighting back. So okay, I wasn't gluing myself to roads or buildings to fight back against the system, but I still had the same anger and I still had the same kind of impotent rage in a way. So I think as to be in the world but not of the world is to not have this sort of cold detachment, and also to sort of to realize to have love and compassion to others, to groups of people, as I say, like eco warriors and eco campaigners, that other people online might, as I probably done a bit in the past, you know, point the finger and say, oh god, these people are just idiots, they're woke idiots, I can't believe how brainwashed they are. It's just to have a little bit of have a little bit of humility and say, you know, well, I sometimes behave, as we all do, in ways that aren't very grown up, that aren't very mature. So I just wanted to share that. I just wanted to share my perspective in that regard with you today. So just moving on. What I want to also talk about next up is this sort of idea of why is it? Obviously an ongoing dilemma that many of us have. Why is it that people continue to refuse to wake up? What is it? I've spoken about recently some of the reasons why people refuse to wake up. But why is it that people refuse point blank to look at the world in a different way, to try and find a different perspective, to look out into the void, into the vastness of existence, and choose, as I described, choose to walk through a different door, a different reality. Choose to walk through a door where everything is turned on its head. Now, and you know, you see life completely anew, and you see life completely afresh. Now, on the one hand, I think a lot of people go, well, I don't trust the authorities. I understand that governments and corporations and quangos and NGOs and all the rest of it are involved in greed and corruption. So a lot of people, they say, well, yeah, I can agree with that. But if you have a conversation with these types of people, and then we say, well, do you believe or do you have a conception that some of these things, you know, like the COVID scandemic, is or was deliberately planned and orchestrated? And that's the point at which, whereby people who believe they can understand and comprehend the authorities, as you're saying, the corruption and the greed. But when you're saying, when you move to a conversation of there are forces for bad, dark forces working through government and government intelligence agencies who are steering or who are attempting to steer humanity in a certain direction, that's the point at which you lose people. That's the point at which you get the cognitive dissonance in their minds. So you get two contrasting, two contradictory perspectives or two contradictory kind of ideas that arise in the mind, kind of potted sort of description, if you like, of cognitive dissonance. And then at that point, you know, you've lost them, and then they'll say, oh, you're a, not that this is a very hypothetical conversation that I'm talking about, because I don't attempt to wake people up, but just to, you know, for the purposes of this conversation, if we were to attempt to bring a little bit more awareness to someone, then at this point they would say, oh, you're just an anti-vaxxer. I suppose you believe that the earth is flat, and you were pushing Trump's theory that people need to inject bleach into their veins in order to so that they don't fall ill with COVID-19, and ha ha ha, all that conversation. But I think, so this main issue that we're talking about here is people aren't prepared to go that little bit more, I think, predominantly because a further extension in terms of cognitive dissonance is because people are brought up to believe the state is the protector, the state is there to ensure they don't come to any harm, like a parent or a guardian. So it's very, very difficult to believe that the state would be actively involved in operations, shall we say, if I can put it like that, that do lead to the general, sorry, that do lead to harm of the general public. The other thing also is, I think that's what I do quite a lot, is I discount, because I've been at this kind of game for a long time now, been on the path for a long time, since about 2005, I constantly discount the courage it takes to walk through that door, to walk through the door into the world where everything is upside down, where we look at existence completely anew, afresh, where we look at life completely in a completely different way. It takes, it really does take immense strength of character to walk into an alternate reality, or a different reality, if you like. And that's why I think it will always be a minority pursuit. As many other people say online, I don't think we're going to see this mass or general awakening anytime soon. For that reason, I think the conditions on Earth are going to, over many, many years, probably centuries, they are already, as I've spoken to before, begin to improve. So as the conditions on Earth energetically improve, we can draw on greater strengths within, which means people have, how should we say, perhaps greater motivation to wake up to some degree. But I believe it always will be an immensely difficult challenge, because it's unrelenting, if I can put it like that, because like with me, as soon as I feel that I've made some sort of advancement on the path of awakening, I come to the realization, oh, Ant, you've just found yourself in another comfort zone. You've just found yourself in another position whereby I thought I was advancing, but I'm not really. So it is... I think we should all we should all congratulate ourselves on a daily basis. Hammer home this point again. Congratulate ourselves on a daily basis that we made this decision, whenever it might have been, a few months ago, a few years ago, or in my case, getting on for nearly 20 years ago, where we made an active decision. And I remember my point, I'm just going to finish this episode on this particular point today, because I'm running short of time. I remember the actual point where I don't know if I just put it out in the ether, I put a commandment out to my higher self, God, the universe, whatever it was. And I remember I was sat up in bed, and it was autumn 2005, and I was reading the excellent book called The Road Less Travelled by Scott Peck, I believe, real classic sort of self-help / personal development / spiritual book, a deeply spiritual book, many spiritual themes in there. And as I was reading that, and I put out this request into the ether, into the universe, I literally felt a physical sensation, a real physical sensation in my body. It was like something clicked in my body, and really I knew from that moment forth things were gonna change for me, and there was no running away from myself. And it meant a lot of challenges, because as we know, walking the path, it's not easy. You can't run away from yourself, and it does bring up a lot of our hidden darkness comes to the fore to be processed, especially at this time. So just lastly, the takeaway from this is, if you are struggling right now, is to give yourself a big pat on the back. And the fact, if you just turn up every day, you put one foot in front of another, you're being a good human being, and you know, you're trying to live in truth, you're trying to every day see things anew, you're trying to read the messages, the subtle cues and messages from nature. As I record this here in the forest today, the birds are speaking to me, and it's a beautiful, calm, still setting. So yeah, I just wanted to share that with you all today. So thank you all for tuning in and for listening. If you are enjoying my work at the moment, if it's something that you can relate to, at least in a small way, then please do share my content on your own social media platforms. Tell your friends and family about me as well, because it obviously does help to get my word, to get my work out there. Every little bit helps, so to speak. So thank you all for tuning in once again, and I will speak to you all again next week for the latest episode of Into the Void. Thank you very much. Bye for now.